Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted Brewer Show with your hosts, Ted and Austin Brewer, bringing you the latest world news and health research. This is Ted Brewer, and I'm so glad you're with us here today. And Austin, I'm glad you're with me today. And your wife is due today, and they're thinking it'll be this week. You're going to be a daddy. So you got to be pretty excited.
Yeah, we're all pretty excited. It looks like it's probably going to be on Thursday. That's what I think, and we're going to be shooting for it. I mean, obviously, the due date when they originally come up with it, I mean, it's all kind of speculation anyways. Whenever the baby decides to come out and he drops all the way and he's ready to go, is when it's going to happen.
Well,
so, yeah, it looks like it's probably going to be Thursday.
Yeah. Tell me about that golden hour. I don't think people know this. I didn't even know about this. It's about how they don't cut the umbilical anymore when you do the midwife stuff. This is really interesting, guys. Austin told me this thing. I wasn't aware of all this because this is all like new to me. Go ahead, Oz.
Well, yeah. What they do cut the umbilical cord eventually. You don't leave it on there forever. But what happens is in the last, I would say probably 15 to 20 years, the research, the technology, the learning that everybody started to figure out and understand with children and childbearing is just exploded because of the internet. You know, before you had a kid, you know, it was pretty much whatever the doctor said in the hospital was the law of the land. That's how they did it. That's how they've done it for 50, 60 years. That's how they're going to do it now. Same way with the midwives. They've always been pretty consistent with it. Well, when you started having the conception of the internet really start exploding in the late 90s, you've got this information influx now from blogs, forums, personal, you know, testimonies, all kinds of research, and it's all there at your fingertips. So the knowledge base we're gaining from birthing and pregnancy now has exploded. And so what that leads me into is the golden hour is what they refer to it as. I had no idea about this the last couple months. And what they do now as far as the midwife is when the baby is first born, they said the first hour is incredibly crucial for a couple different things. The production of the milk from the mother, the regulation of the body temperature, and also the immune system of the child with the skin-to-skin contact, also to the entire actual starting process of the feeding. So they say for the first hour, the child should be basically skin-to-skin with the mother. They put him on the belly. They put like a blanket over him and her, you know, enough to partially cover him up but to keep him warm because he's just gotten exposed to the air. And then they leave him there. You let him sit there for like an hour with the mother. And what he'll actually do, you look this up online, after about 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, he will actually slowly start to army crawl, very slowly, up to the nipple because it's time for him to eat. And what happens is they see children basically when they're first born, it's pretty black and white. There's really no color vision. So the first thing they see is the nipple, and they immediately start gravitating towards it, and they will slowly start to crawl up there and start to feed. And then the mother holds them, you know, nurtures them, cuddles them, and it allows this really, really significant bond and also this regulation of all kinds of different hormones, body temperature, breast milk, everything kind of dials in. Because you got to remember, guys, it's been 9 months this kid has been in, you know, the mother's womb. 9 months. Everything has been in there for 9 months. And all of a sudden now he's thrust it out into the world. He's got this rude awakening of what's going on. And at most times in the hospitals, you know, they pull them out, bam, immediately clamp the cord, cut it, take them off, go give them a shot, do all this nonsense, and then later on they'll let the mother hold him. It's completely unnecessary and it's completely unnatural. The umbilical cord will actually start to clamp down on its own after it's been exposed to the air. And what happens is if you clamp down, you know, artificially clamp the hose, the umbilical cord, and cut it, you actually do not allow the full amount of blood from the placenta to all reach all the way into the child, and it can be all the way up to, I think, almost a pint of blood that is not given over to the child from the placenta when he's born. So you want to let that umbilical cord naturally clamp down on its own from exposure to the air and then go ahead and clamp it and cut it after an hour and go from there. But, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. Lana is actually going to be writing a whole article on this right now in detail about what she's learned and also what she how everything goes. And that's going to be on the website probably next week sometime after everything goes through. And that'll be on healthmasters.com. You can go on there and read that for free. But, yeah, we just want to keep you guys informed about this because we're learning as we go. And I told you guys, you know, when I brought this up, we're doing it as naturally as we can physically do. And I'm holding true to that. That's what we're doing.
You know, it's funny. Back in the old days, back in the 50s, they told the women not to breastfeed. soon as the baby came out, the doctor would hold the kid upside down by the ankle, slap him on his butt, make him scream, grab for air. The kid's going through this, oh my God, I want to go back where I came from. This is like a nightmare place to come to. This is like living in hell now. I want to go back. And it's awful what happened to these children. And, you know, it's also funny, the day I was at the, it wasn't funny, it was actually horrible. Some lady came into the doctor's office. I was getting a chelation shot. I told you guys I do that like once every month, that once every couple of months I actually inject EDTA directly into my bloodstream. And then what it does, it binds up heavy metals in the blood. It's like doing it from a oral standpoint. We have that at the office, but this goes directly into the bloodstream, so it works a lot faster. And so I'm sitting in there and I'm trying to relax, giving myself this injection of EDTA. It takes about 20 minutes. And they make the decision to go ahead and circumcise this little boy in the exact room next to us with no sound deadening in the walls with the doors open. And oh my gosh, that kid scream and scream and scream. Kind of like somebody was cutting off the end of his penis. Oh, that's right. That's what they were doing to him as far as the skin. And I couldn't believe it. I just sat there and the lady comes out. She's dressed like a weirdo in some kind of weird cultish type of clothes. And I thought myself, this is an archaic Jewish practice from the Old Testament. The Bible tells you in the New Testament it's not necessary. This was to establish a covenant between the Jews and God and Abraham. And this is nutty that they still do this. And as long as you keep that foreskin clean on a newborn, in fact, you don't have to do it on a newborn, but you know, as the child begins to grow, develop, you never have any problems with that. And doing that to a child is just another form of barbarism as far as I'm concerned. And Austin, tell us about circumcision. You told me that because you learned about all that today or in your midwifery classes that you've been taking. Tell me about the circumcision and when it first started going and why it became such a trend in the United States.
Well, yeah, as most of our listeners probably know, if you've done any research, the United States is really one of the only countries in the world that is essentially obsessed with circumcising male boys as soon as they're born. And it's really unnecessary. It's obviously a very natural reason that it's designed like that, is to protect it. And going in and chopping off part of it immediately after birth is not healthy at all. Even the Jews practice that is supposed to be done after 7 days, and that's for a very specific reason.
Well, this baby was 7 days old today.
Was he? Okay, well, at least they did that. In the hospital, they'll do it right after he's born.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened was in the 1900s, you know, from the UK to the United States in the early 1900s, circumcision was definitely not very common. It was about 1 out of 10 that happened in the United States. What happened was at the start of World War I, a lot of the Navy and sailors and the military actually started mandating specific parts of these groups that the males, full-grown males now, they're 18, 19, 20 years old, would have to be circumcised, because they said that it would prevent them from getting penile cancer and also prevent them from getting STDs, which now we know that's complete and total nonsense. So they were actually making these guys get circumcised at 18, 19, 20 years of age, which is brutal, and then having to heal up while you're on the boat or you're on base. And so what happened was after World War One, a lot of these guys got out of the military and still had the same ideology of it was really necessary, it prevented this, it prevented that. So that kind of thought process continued to take place, and a large percent of the population looked up to the military back then as well as they do now. So you have a lot of guys coming out of the military telling their friends about it, hey, listen, you got a boy, do not wait till he's older to circumcise. Just do it right off the bat. It's healthier. He won't get penis cancer. go ahead and do it that way. Well, it started to become more of a trend. Well, what happened was it still was not that significant until the insurance industrial complex, I would refer to it, started in the 50s. After World War II, it started to pick up a little bit more. By 1958, it was about 9 out of 10 boys in the United States were circumcised at that point, primarily because the insurance companies were constantly in competition with one another. So they would offer these larger and larger, more grande plans for health insurance. So one of the things they all started including was automatic circumcision at birth. They would include it in the health care plan for pregnancy plan. So, of course, most people thought at the time, the still old ideology, that it was really healthy, it was really important, it needed to be done. And so they continued to do that. And so, like I said, it got to a point where it was so popular that everybody's continued to do it, and now we've seen generation after generation continue to do it as an old ideology from back in the day that it prevents penile cancer and STDs, which it does not. And so now we're actually starting to see a trend backwards now. I spoke with a midwife, and she said in the last 10 to 15 years, the rates have steadily started to decline, especially with midwives, because people are realizing that it's really just butchery. There's no reason to do it whatsoever. If somebody has at least moderately decent hygiene throughout their life, it's never a problem. You're born like that for a specific reason, and going in and chopping part of that off when they're born has no purpose whatsoever but to make the insurance companies and the hospital companies more money, what she told me. She said the average rate for a circumcision cost at a hospital ranges from $300 to $2,200 at the hospital. You heard me right. I didn't stutter on that. $2,200 in some hospitals for that, all the way down to about $250 to $300 and everywhere in between. So again, we find it's the hospital model, the insurance model, that wants to make more money by doing another erroneous, just barbaric butchery chop job on a child right when they're born. It has no legitimate purpose whatsoever, and that's pretty much the story about it. So that is my stand on it, and that's my take, and I wanted to let you guys know about that because most people have no idea. It's just ingrained in the American public. Your boy's born, he gets circumcised, that's the end of it. And like I said, we're like the only country that still does it in mass quantities all the time.
Well, you know, it's kind of crazy because, I mean, Savannah was with me today with a chelation shot because she had a plantar wart on her foot and they were removing that. And so she was waiting, and, you know, the doors were all open in the doctor's office. And we're hearing this kid with these blood-curdling screams, right? And I looked at Savannah. I said, well, you're next. Bless her heart. She was like, oh, I can't believe I'm going in the same room. And I said, well, you're going into the same room. That's where they do all of this stuff. And so it was interesting. But, guys, I hope you don't mind us sharing all this stuff with you. You're like our Health Masters family anyhow. And, you know, we talk to you guys every day like you're sitting in the living room with us. And so this was the updated version I got. Oh, and also I'm going to tell them one more thing you told me, Austin. Basically, grandparents are no longer needed in the hospital or in the surgery suite or in the midwife suite. And I was told today that I would be called after the baby was born and after the golden hour was finished so I could come over and see the newborn. But as far as all of this stuff now, it's what it is. It's what it's supposed to be. It's between the midwife, between the husband and the wife, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And I told him I was good with that because I've had four kids. I've gotten tired of sitting around and waiting, you know, while someone's in labor for all that to go through too. So it's a lot easier to just to have call me up when it's all done. So we're good. What's your first story today, Oz?
Well, it is, and I was glad, you know, you were okay with that. And the truth about it is exactly like you said, is that, I mean, the childbirth, it really should be as natural and as close as it is with the husband, the wife, the child, and whoever's actually assisting. And it's nothing against parents or grandparents or anything like that. It's just for the fact that it needs to be a very close, in my opinion, this is my opinion, it needs to be a close bonding time with the husband and wife and their child that they're birthing. And the thing about it is, guys, if you're there 30 minutes or an hour after the baby's born, you didn't miss much anyways, but a whole bunch of just, you know, childbirth, you know, sounds and moans and groans. So you're really not missing a whole lot with that. And it just gives a lot more intimacy between the husband and wife and the kid. And then everybody else can come in after an hour or so, and then they can get their photos and do whatever they want after they wash all their hands.
With no flash photography, the baby really dislikes that.
No flash photography at all, but you can turn on some mild lights in the room so at least you can see the face.
Okay, well, let me go ahead with the first story. We talked about this last night. Your mom and I didn't have a chance to cover it. Foods that help to avoid strokes. Number one are fish, and primarily because of omega-3 fats, primarily salmon, because the fish really helps keep the blood thinner. When you start eating a lot of beef and a lot of particularly pork, you can actually thicken up the blood, and it can actually increase the risk of stroke because it can actually elevate blood pressure, and plus it forces the blood to go through these tiny capillaries after it's gotten so thick, and it massively increases the pressure on the blood vessels. Pumpkin seeds have actually shown to reduce the risk of strokes. Of course, fruits and vegetables, we already know that because, of course, that keeps the blood sugar stabilized. Also, they're telling us here in this article that I'm looking at that you can have different types of green tea. That's why I use the purple sticks, by the way, because it's one of the best things you can do. Not coffee, okay? Coffee actually increases the risks of stroke and heart attack. don't want to use coffee. You don't ever want to use coffee unless you just do it occasionally. I used to love coffee. In fact, I still love coffee. I'm not going to sit here and paint some halo over myself. When I was in graduate school at Florida State University, I used to drink 18 cups of coffee a day, because any of you who've been in graduate school, you know what it's like. They make you do an inordinate amount of reading. Sometimes you're reading one or two books a week. And I got into that habit, and I still do a lot of that because I love to read. So that was a good thing. But the reality is this. You know, you don't have to drink coffee. You can do the green tea. I use the purple sticks. We have them on in inventory. We're almost out again. So once we get out, once we get out, it's out, you know. So they're the purple sticks. I take one a day in the morning. And every once in a while, I may take a quarter of one or whatever before this show, depending upon my blood sugar and my energy levels and how well I slept and all that kind of stuff. Number five, olive oil. You need to be drinking at least a couple ounces of olive oil, probably up to a cup every single week in your food that you're preparing. I always use olive oil in my cooking of my vegetables and heating up my chicken and stuff like that, because I try to eat four or five little meals a day. And olive oil is great. It really, really helps keep the blood thin. It's a great product, high in omega-3 fats again. And if it gets a little bit too hot, it'll start splattering in the pan. If you sprinkle a little bit of our deep mind salt in there, it'll actually stop a lot of that splattering of the oil when you're cooking with it. They're saying in here that the dark chocolate, that it helps too, and some studies have actually shown that. But guys, you've got to be really careful with chocolate, because a lot of the chocolate now has been shown to massively contain lead. And the reason that happens is because down in Ecuador and a lot of other countries are still using leaded gasoline. And that leaded gas is in the air and it lands on these cocoa leaves. The precipitate, the particulates fall back down, and this stuff gets into the pods and it ends up being in the chocolate. So you got to be really, really careful with eating too much chocolate because of the lead contamination. And that's one of the dirty little secrets of coffee or chocolate that nobody ever wants to talk about. And of course, then resveratrol is the other thing. Take supplemental resveratrol. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to drink wine. Well, there's very little resveratrol in wine, and alcohol increases the risks of pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, alcoholism, osteoporosis, and breast cancer. There is no way on God's green earth that you should be drinking wine to be healthy and to reduce the risks of heart disease. That is just ridiculous assumptions and ridiculous suggestions. In fact, the original article that was done back in the 90s on this particular topic about wine and reduction of heart disease was based on the Mediterranean diet, and they said because the Italians were drinking a lot of wine or the French were drinking a lot of wine that they were having these reduced risks of heart disease. But what they don't tell you about the French is because they drink so much alcohol, they stay drunk all the time. It's ridiculous over there. They have some of the highest incidences of pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, alcoholism, osteoporosis, and breast cancer. And what they did say in the article was this: if you don't drink, don't start to reduce your risk of heart disease, because it increases the risks of all these other diseases. But of course, the wine manufacturers left that little tidbit out of the research, and they started, everybody, drink wine. Well, no, just take resveratrol. Also, we've got a great resveratrol product too. Tell them about it real quick.
Oh yeah, it's resveratrol. It's super high dosed. I mean, I think to get one capsule that we have, to get the equivalent of the resveratrol, you'd have to drink like three or four bottles of wine. I mean, it's an ultra high dose, high potency resveratrol. And, you know, that's one aspect of it, is there's so many ways now to get really, really good, high quality resveratrol, like our product. It contains way more resveratrol than wine, and you're not consuming a bunch of alcohol. It's just, it's really not long-term benefit at all to drink alcohol. Like I said, if you're doing it for a social thing or it's Christmas time and you're going to have some wine, that's fine. And you don't have to make an excuse for yourself. If that's what you want to do it, you're a grown person. But don't sit there and try and delude yourself and everybody else around you by saying, well, I drink half a bottle of wine every night because it's good for my heart, because it's healthy, it's got resveratrol. No, there's entirely too many other healthier options you can be doing. So if you want to drink wine, then drink wine, but don't sit there and, you know, delude yourself into thinking it's a healthy option.
Well, now, the one exception with that, though, if you're driving a car, don't drink and drive, period, at all. Don't touch anything. And number two, if you have alcoholism in your family, if your mother, your brother, your sister, or whatever, any immediate family member is an alcoholic, it's particularly your parents or your grandparents, it's really important, because that's a genetic marker. If you have that genetic marker, I mean, about 10% of the population is genetically predisposed to become alcoholics based upon genetic markers in their parents or grandparents. With me, my mom drank a lot. She never did without. She was pregnant with us, thank God. But being a German, she loved her beer. And so it was one of those things I had to deal with, that. She was pretty much a functional alcoholic. It was awful, to be honest with you guys. I mean, she'd sit there sometimes and just not talk to us for days on end because she was drunk. And it was awful, you know, because she'd gone through World War II. and has seen so much, it had really messed her up. You know, I mean, she rests in peace. There was a lot, she had a lot of really good traits, but the alcohol was not one of them. And her father, my grandfather, he was a big time beer drinker too. So I've got half of that DNA in my family. My brother, he, in other words, he was from a different father. He was born during the war. My oldest brother, one of my brothers, and he ended up basically becoming an alcoholic. Now, my father, on the other hand, he didn't drink beer. He didn't touch it. His father didn't drink it. And so that wasn't a big deal. But I've been very, very careful my entire adult life. I don't drink maybe, I may have a beer once a year. And that's like if I'm with my German relatives and they offer me one and I don't want to be rude to them, but never when I drive a car. But I just don't do that stuff, Austin. You know that. You've been with me for almost 28 years now. You know, I just don't do it. I mean, occasionally I will, because there's no such thing as, the Bible doesn't say that having a beer or having a glass of wine is a sin. It does not say that. Don't put that in anybody's mind, because it's not. Because Jesus' first miracle was to turn water into wine, and that's after everybody was so drunk they didn't know the difference. He left to save the best wine till last. So Jesus himself said, you know, it's not a sin. He would have done it. But what is a sin is drunkenness. That is not of God, and that's not something we need to do it. And alcoholism, that's no good, because that's always being drunk. That's bad. So don't think you can just get away with drinking alcohol and it's okay. And I know, I've had Christian authors who are medical doctors have written books and encouraged people to drink wine. That's just from the pit of hell. I'll be honest with you, it's from the pit of hell. The reason they drank the wine in the old days back in Israel and everywhere else is the water was so contaminated, and they put like 10% of the wine into water to kill the bacteria because the alcohol sterilized the water. That's why they did it. So it's a super diluted wine. Super diluted. But that's not what we do today. Some of the stuff's 14, 15, 20% alcohol, and it's just not healthy. It's just, there's no way that you can do that. Because remember, alcohol is a neurotoxin, guys. It's not something you need to be dumping in your body in high concentrations ever. And I've never heard anybody say, my life was a wreck, and then I started drinking, and everything worked out great. It doesn't work that way. Alcohol is bad, bad, bad. Austin, what's your next story?
Well, this is interesting now. The Obama administration has finally caved into a judge's order last Friday, and it looks like they sent out the documents from the botched Fast and the Furious gun running operation to Congress, complying with a subpoena that was issued years ago. President Obama claimed executive privilege in trying to shield the documents from Congress, but a federal judge rejected that, insisting lawmakers had a right to see the information in order to complete their investigation into an operation that saw thousands of guns trafficked into Mexico with the administration's knowledge. And this is the part. However, the documents were not complete, and the administration is still withholding records. The judge thinks Congress is entitled to see them. The committee has filed now another appeal of the case to try and get the remaining of the records.
Well, no, when they start yelling executive privilege, there's not much you can do. And he's not going to turn them in with all the documents that are going to get him in trouble anyhow until he's getting ready to leave office.
Exactly.
That's what he's going to do. That's what he's going to do. So that's what he's done. He stalled this thing for years now. And, of course, we all know that basically Trump was completely hosed over in Colorado, and they've already given the delegates before the election to Cruz. I'm not even going to talk about that today because Alex has been screaming about that for all weekend. And it's just a big mess. And, you know, the truth of the matter is I warned you guys months ago that the big steal was on as far as what they're going to do with Trump. And they got him to sign that notice that he was going to support whoever was a Republican nominee, and he said he would only do that if they treated him fairly. They're not treating him fairly. I mean, they want Hillary Clinton to be president. That's the whole thing. The GOP is as corrupt and as satanic and as pedophilic or whatever you want to call it, and condemned. They're awful, okay? They're just awful. And, you know, their Democratic Party is awful. Don't get me wrong. Bernie Sanders is a communist. I got that. But God, he's better than Hillary. I mean, as hard as it is to say that, he's better than Hillary. And the nuttiest part about it is at least he tries to tell the truth, and he's distanced himself from the big banks. I mean, what does he say? That you flip a coin over one side, it's Hillary, the other side is Trump or Cruz? Well, I don't believe the thing is true with Trump because I believe he's an outsider. I mean, he's not a secret Bohemian Grove, you know, secret society weirdo, okay? So, I mean, the whole thing is just this giant, giant mess. And guys, you know, I love the United States. I love the thought of the United States and what the United States once was. But this is not what our founding fathers had in mind. This is not it. Okay, this is not it. I don't know. It's like I mentioned this before. I'm going to say it again. When we were watching that one movie, Gladiator, and you know, when Russell Crowe's running up the ramp to go fight, and he goes, Marcus Aurelius had a vision of what Rome was. And he goes, this is not it. And that's what this is. This is not it. Having our elections completely stolen from us, this is not what the founding fathers had in mind. This is not what they're supposed to do. This is absolute and total chaos, orchestrated thievery, if you want to call it that. It's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. But I don't want to spend any more time on that, so I'm just getting angry. This last night, I talked in detail on my show with Sharon about the DARPA scientist, Dr. Paul Batcho, who's now come out. He worked with DARPA. He worked his top secret clearance, and he said that they're going to be using and can use cell towers, and he says they are currently using cell towers doing experimentation on people and thought control and mind control, and the technology is available, and he wants everybody to let the government know that they're doing this. And again, I saw another list today. This is electromagnetic frequency mind control weapons. This is by Dr. Patrick Flanagan. Let me read you, though. This is interesting. Dr. Patrick Flanagan, this is off of Rents Radio, speaks here about mind control frequency and how they are piggybacking on the many carrier frequencies within the electro smog enshrouding the developed world, entraining the brainwaves of human beings and even animals in a horrific, invisible prison of mind control. This is written by Alexander Bruce, brilliant writer. Listen to this. Flanagan was a Wunderkind, which means a brilliant child, a wonder child, that's the German term for it, who developed and sold a guided missile detector to the U.S. military when he was 11 years old. I'm going to repeat this. No, this, I'm not making this up, okay? Flanagan was a Wunderkind who developed and sold a guided missile detector to the U.S. military when he was 11 years old. At 17, he had his air pilot's license, and he worked at a think tank at the Pentagon at 17. Wow. Later, he was a consultant to the NSA, the CIA, and NASA, Tufts University, and the Office of Naval Research. There you go. And the Aberdeen Proving Grounds for the Department of Unconventional Weapons and Warfare. In 1958, he invented the neurophone, an electronic nervous system excitation device that transmits sound through the skin and directly to the brain, for which he received a U.S. patent, and which has been used by the military for mind control applications ever since. And he says, I'm going to read this again. He goes, Dr. Patrick Flanagan speaks here, it's on Rents, about mind control frequencies and how they are piggybacking on the many carrier frequencies within the electromagnetic smog enshrouding the developed world, entraining the brave waves of human beings and even animals in a horrific, invisible prison of mind control. And Dave Hodges had a big article on this week about the guy from the CIA and DARPA. Guys, I've broken this story, you know, on this show and on Hagman and on Hodges, you know, years ago, and I've talked about this at length last fall and how they do it. This is real technology. Now you can say, well, that's not true, that's science fiction, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, that's okay. If that's what you want to believe, if you believe that radar detectors in your car are witchcraft, which I've heard before with pastors saying that, if you want to believe that so you can stay in Pollyanna, you're okay. But I'm telling you, this technology, all of this research is piggybacking what happened in Roswell in 1947 with the development of all the technology from these back-engineered spaceships that apparently these fallen angels or these entities are using from these other dimensions. And this is real. And you can pretend like it's not real. You can act like it's not real. But this is part of the shadow government that runs the planet. These guys who run the world consider themselves to be the benign Nephilim, sons of the fallen. They trace their lineage all the way back to Lucifer, to the Tower of Babel, all the way back to Nimrod, and these guys want to put Lucifer or the son of perdition or the Antichrist in the temple, spill his blood, name him the king of the world. That's why they're all in a big frenzy trying to rebuild the temple. To me, my response is this. How about we just don't rebuild the temple, Austin? How about that? How about Christians just stop giving money to the Jewish Temple Relief Fund in order to not rebuild the temple over in Israel? How about we just don't do that? How about we stop believing the Scofield Bible about Zionism and we realize just maybe we don't need to facilitate this mess, and we can ask for a break here from God, so we say, hey, look, God, give us a reprieve, another 50, 60, 70, 80 years. Give us a chance to try to get more people saved before the first books of Revelation start to open up. How about we do that instead of trying to rebuild the temple? Because this is where all the stuff starts to go, all that mischief starts to take place in the temple. So that's how I look at it, Austin. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and plus, like you said earlier, one of the articles we brought up the other day, how they're bringing up the Baal temples all across the world now. And I mean, this is something that's pretty serious, guys. I mean, if you don't think that they're trying to bring this back, that they're not trying to bring the fallen ones back in and trying to expose us to them. Does anybody ever wonder why we see so many science fiction movies about alien invasion all the time? All the time, there's another one out. I mean, they're coming out with a new Independence Day again. They're trying to get everybody desensitized to that and completely okay. So when that happens, when they try to bring something in like that and say, well, these guys are coming in, this is that, and the Nephilim are this or that, whatever they want to come up with, most of the general population is going to be okay with it because they've been programmed, predictively programmed, by the mainstream media to accept this is okay.
I got to jump in here real quick. Some of the top scientists are now saying that they're trying to use the CERN, the Hadron Collider, over in Geneva, Switzerland, to open the portals, because apparently some of these things got locked up there with the flood, some of these entities, right? And they got locked into this flood. After the flood, they got locked up. Now, not all of them, because the Bible says they were here afterwards. Apparently, God really came in and cleaned house with these guys. And now, because they're trapped in these other dimensions, they're trying to open these portals back up again to let these guys come back down to the planet. I mean, you know, guys, I mean, think about it. If everybody's thought was evil all of the time, how bad is that going to get? Well, that's what they're going to. I know last night we had some folks come over who are friends now, who are some realtors. We were looking at some property yesterday. And it was interesting that they had just gone to this big convention of this guy who's, if I mentioned his name, everybody would know who he is. He's this big motivational speaker. I'm not going to tell you his name. And I remember back in the 90s, Zig Ziglar refused to even appear on the platform with this guy. And this guy actually passes out hotel room keys at the end of the seminars to girls to come up to his room to do crazy things. And, you know, here's the deal. Remember when Paul said, don't do the orgy thing? Remember when Paul said that? He was warning, and we always sit here, we go, well, why is everybody always talking about orgies in the New Testament? Well, this is what was going on. When without Jesus Christ and the world gets more and more and more evil, you know, all of it goes back down into sexual deviation. This is back all the way back to Aleister Crowley, all the way back to Rome. That's what happens. And I warned these people. I said, look, stay away from this guy. He's bad, bad news. If you want to listen to people that are really good, who both of them are dead now, though may they rest in peace, you get their stuff for free on the internet now. Listen to Zig Ziglar stuff. It's on YouTube. And listen to Jim Rohn. It's on YouTube. Those two guys are the ones that I cut my teeth on. Those two guys are phenomenal. And they didn't run around having orgies. In fact, Ziglar was one of the most godly men I've ever met. He's a really strong, stout, you know, staunch Southern Baptist. And I mean, he was a phenomenal man. And he's a good friend of mine. In fact, I dedicated my first book to him. And Jim Rohn, these two people completely changed my life and my thinking back in the 80s. This is like, oh God, almost 40 years ago. And so they really, really, really helped get me on the right track, because they taught me to talk the right way, to think the right way, to act the right way, all of these different things that were never taught anywhere. But these other motivational speakers that are running around now, some of them are good. Some of them are really, 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 really into the satanic stuff. And so you got to stay away from these guys. And if you want to call me up or email me, I'll tell you some of the other good ones. But I'm not going to mention any of the bad ones, because I know these guys, and I just keep them out of my personal movie. I don't want them in my movie. Austin, you got another question?
That's definitely pretty good advice on that. Because I mean, I saw that too when you were on the shows. Even though I was younger, I mean, a lot of those guys got involved with some pretty raunchy stuff. And you don't see it on the platform because it's the
No, here's what happens, okay? When I'm speaking out there in a seminar and I've got 38,000 people and I'm in a stadium or whatever, and then I go to the tape table, and the main tape table, of course we have tape tables everywhere, but then it was tapes, and before the CDs even came out, it was back in the 90s. What happens is all the women that are looking for a guy that's successful come running up. You know, this happens all the time. And I'm talking really pretty girls, women. And they want to talk to you. They want your autograph. They want pictures taken and all this kind of stuff. They're giving you their room keys and all this stuff. You know, I just said, you know, I said, I watched so many of the guys on the circuit with us do that. They would just find a different girl in every city. And they did this repeatedly. In fact, finally, I got so fed up with it. I told Peter Lowe, I said, look, guy, Peter, I said, this guy is doing this. This guy is doing this. This guy is doing this. I said, this is ridiculous. These guys are all married. They're all a bunch of adulterers. Why do you have them on the platform? He goes, well, they sell a lot of tickets and they sell a lot of books and CDs and tapes and stuff. He goes, oh, we have them here from a marketing standpoint. I said, look, man, you guys are a bunch of whores. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, don't have them speak. This is supposed to be a Christian, conservative, business guy's event. Well, sorry, Ted. No, I can't help you with that. I'm like, okay, whatever. And Austin, you saw a lot of that too, because I told you about what was happening. Finally, yep. I got to the point. I got so fed up with it. I brought a guy on the road with me, and he went to the tape tables, and I just didn't even go to the tape tables anymore. I hired somebody to run the tape tables for me, and I had Peter Lowe's people run the tape tables for me. And as soon as I would speak, I would leave. They'd jump, put me in a car. I'd go back to the hotel room before the seminar was even out. I'd go up to my room, and I'd order something to eat from room service, and I just disappeared. That was it. That's what I did. Or I'd have you with me and mom with me, and we were in the motorhome, and we would get in the motorhome, and we would leave. And you know that. They would call me. I'd be 200, 300 miles down the road. They'd call me up and tell me, you know, what type of sales we had that day, what kind of people we had there, any questions, blah, blah, blah. And that's what I did, because the Bible says no appearance of evil. And guys, listen to me. I don't care who you are. You don't need to be talking to women. I don't care what city you're in, who are your wives, you know, in an intimate way. I mean, if you say hello to somebody or nod at them in passing and you just ignore them, whatever. But don't engage them in, you know, in conversation like that, unless it's a business deal and you've got other people with you, then it's, and you have to do that. That's different. But, you know, don't be setting yourself up for a mess like that. I've seen so many people, including pastors, Austin, who've counseled women privately in their offices, and so many of them end up in adulterous relationships, and I've seen it over and over and over. I'm 60 years old now, and I've seen a lot of this nonsense. So, guys, the Bible says this is something you need to flee. Flee the sexual immorality. Just flee it. Stay away from it. Avoid it. It's like having ice cream in the house, okay? Don't buy ice cream. Just don't buy ice cream. Because if you have ice cream in the house, you're going to go eat ice cream. Okay? Don't do that. Just leave the ice cream for the ice cream parlor. So when your family and you want to go out and get some ice cream, go buy an organic ice cream parlor, get some organic ice cream, pay the extra money for it, sit there and enjoy it and be done with it. Because if you bring ice cream in the house, you're going to want to eat it all the time. If you're exposed to this stuff long enough and often enough and with enough fervency and they get good looking enough, you're going to start thinking about stuff, especially if you've been away from home for a while. Don't do that. Just avoid it. It's just easier. And again, that's why I brought you with me all the time up on the platform, and mom was with me all the time on the platform. And whenever I did that, I could wipe that out. I didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. Plus, I always left anyhow. So it's just a lot easier. So that's just that whole seminar world. I did it. Spoke to over a million people at live seminars. Shared the platform with Bush and Schwartzoff and Colin Powell and Larry King and just a plethora of other people. I've even met Henry Kissinger. What a strange person he was. And guys, listen to me. It's an interesting world. It's an interesting life to be in, but I'd rather be at home with my family. I really would. Being on the road and traveling like that all the time is a tough way to learn to basically earn a living. And so it was a rough way to go. So yeah, so I don't know why in the world I got off onto that. Awesome. What's your next story?
Well, this coincides with, remember you were talking about the TSA early check-in and stuff like that the other day?
Yep, I remember.
This is interesting. Now, this is out of the Japan News. They have now built something called the Envisioned Payment System using fingerprint authentication. They're going to take registered users' fingerprints and other information at places, including airports, and they're going to allow you to pay for your goods, services, be tax-exempt in the country, and also they're going to allow as a substitute for bringing your passport at a hotel. Starting this summer, the Japanese government will test a system in which foreign tourists will be able to verify their identities and buy things at stores using only their fingerprints. The government hopes to increase the number of foreign tourists by using the system to prevent crime and relieve users from the necessity of carrying cash or cards. The experiment will have inbound tourists register their fingerprints and other data, such as credit card information, at airports. And they hope to completely get the system in the entire country and operational in Tokyo by 2020. And this is interesting because I really thought about this after you told me about that the other day. And we were discussing how we got concealed weapons permits. They already got fingerprints. It doesn't matter. The reason why it matters on giving your fingerprints out now more and more is because it's not old school like it was. We had to send in a pair of fingerprints. It went in a file cabinet somewhere. They had it for a specific reason. And they gave you your concealed weapons permit or something like that. They're using it now as a biometric system. They want to get more and more and more fingerprints locked into the system so that way they can do transactions with it, they can collect uses information on it, they can get big data on it, and they can also make people feel more and more confident into going into the entire digital monetary system, the cashless society as we referred to it before. What an easier way to get people slowly accustomed as to using their fingerprints. So I thought that was interesting. I thought I wanted to address that because I knew there was a reason why TSA is allowing people to do this pre-check screen, because it's a total smoke screen. They already have your information. They already have your passport photos. They already have your fingerprint IDs, like you mentioned before, from concealed weapons permits. They don't need all this stuff before on a digitized system like this. They're doing it because they want to get majority of the population into this system and have everybody's fingerprints on biometric ID, so they can spot you faster, so they can stop you faster, so they can, you know, do more advertisement to you faster. And that's my opinion on it. I may be a little weird in my thinking, but that's my take, and that's where I think it's headed.
You know, I don't know, Austin. I got an email in that somebody warned me about the mark of the beast with this TSA stuff. You sent it to me. You forwarded it to me. And I saw that today. So if you guys are listening, I did see that. I already emailed you back. I'm going to be really careful with this. I'm going to take a look at what they're doing. And if I feel uncomfortable with the information they want when I'm in this interview, I may just say, you know, look, guys, I'm a Christian and I'm not going to be involved in this, but I will not allow myself to be marked with the mark of the beast. I won't do that. But, you know, this is for a couple more months now because the appointment was so far out. I could always miss the appointment or not do it or whatever. But the point is this, you know, everything they're doing is to condition us. And you're right about that.
Yep.
And so I want to see what they do in this whole process, and I'll give you guys a yay or a nay if I even end up doing it, and I'll keep you guys posted. Here's another article. The U.S. is now deploying B-52 bombers to Qatar for fight against the Islamic State. Are you kidding me? This is like walking up to a red ant and nailing it with a 100-pound jackhammer. A B-52, the amount of payload that these things carry are unbelievable. These are not surgical strike weapons. These are like carpet bombs.
Yep.
You know? And now it's saying that they're not going to be dumping carpet bombs. They're going to be doing surgical strikes with it. And I'm like, nah, there's something else going on. They're doing something up. They're getting something set up to go. Oh, by the way, here's another one. This is from Zero Hedge. The U.S. government has revealed that just that a 3,000-ton delivery of weapons to Al-Qaeda links Syrian rebels. The United States via Central Intelligence Agency. Oh, wow, there's the CIA again. Is still delivering thousands of tons of additional weapons to Al-Qaeda and others in Syria. The British Military Information Service, James, found the transport solicitation for the shipment on a U.S. government website, fezbizops.gov. One ship with nearly 1,000 tons of weapons and ammo left Constantinia, Romania on December the 5th. The weapons are from Bulgaria, Croatia, and Romania. It sailed to Aglar in Turkey, which is the military pier, and then into Jordan. Another ship with more than 2,000 tons of weapons. That's a lot of stuff, guys. 2,000 tons in ammo left in late March and followed the same route and was last recorded on its way to Agua on April the 4th. We already knew that the rebels in Syria received plenty of weapons during the official ceasefire, and we also know that these rebels regularly deliver half of their weapon hauls from Turkey and Jordan to Al-Qaeda in Syria. I mean, gosh, guys, I mean, you know, this again, everybody in the United States is like a bunch of mushrooms being raised in a pile of poop, kept in the dark on everything. I mean, unless you're listening to a show like this, or Alex Jones, or Joyce Riley, or somebody else, you're not hearing this anywhere. I mean, I've listened to the mainstream news. They want to talk about why you should be using Prozac and Zoloft and all of the commercials that happen every 3 minutes, and why these things make you commit suicide on the black side of the label. I mean, are you joking me? That's all they talk about now. Remember, the Rothschild boys control the media. That's what they do. They control Hollywood. They control the media. What is it? Six companies control 90 to 95% of the media globally. They tell you what you're supposed to hear. They tell you what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, the fact that Colorado is so spineless now that they allowed this to happen and their votes don't even count blows my mind. But guys, it's because we've been cooked in a slow boil. No one knew it was coming. We've been given fluoride. We've been given Zoloft and Prozac and statin drugs. We've been told not to eat eggs, which help the brain. We've been told to keep our cholesterol down, which cholesterol helps the brain. We've been told that, you know, soy is good, which makes you a girly man. We've been told that, you know, all of these things like fluoride help prevent tooth decay, which is a total lie, makes you servile and infertile. And this has been going on now for 70 years with the fluoride. And what's happened here, Austin, slowly but surely, the men in the United States have turned into girly men. And all they want to do is watch TV, watch football, you know, and just sit there like a veget in the afternoon on Saturdays and Sunday, never look at alternative radio or news, and just sit there and veg out watching the U.S. Open or watching hockey or watching football, because as a tribal person, which we pretty much are, we ended up in a situation where we have this group think, and now we become part of that sports team. And Alan Watt did a good job on the Alex Jones show. You can watch it. Alan Watt, talks about how we've been programmed. You can watch that on YouTube. It's free. It's about an hour video. And he talks about what they've done with the TV sets, with the Alpha Brainwave sets, and how they've made us all part of this big team that we want. You know, Florida State University, now my alma mater, I graduated from there three times. They put up a huge monitor. It's like bigger than the one in Dallas Stadium. It's a big digital monitor in the end zone. It's this huge, huge, huge monitor. Okay, well, it's going to be nice. I admit it's going to be nice to watch a football game with that monitor, with the replays, et cetera. But the thing about it is, guys, we're not our college football team, okay? We have to have a life past college. And I love Florida State, and I love going to games up there, but my life doesn't revolve around that. What do you think, Oz?
Yeah, I agree with you, too. And what I've noticed, too, is that more and more people are being subjected to doing everything on screens now, to the point where most people would rather prefer doing something on a screen or watching something as actually enjoying it in real life. And I'm not knocking that giant screen they're putting up. But, you know, I thought about that the other day. You were talking about how you're at the game, you're watching the live game, and how I wonder what percentage of the population inside that stadium is going to watch the majority of that football game on the screen instead of actually watching the football game down there. And not just with that in general, but just with everything, how it almost seems like everything is always digital. Everybody wants to be on their phone, iPad, computer, TVs. I mean, now a lot of churches, they don't even have pastors there. They'll have satellite churches, and they'll have the screen. You know, you watch the pastor on a screen. And I feel like everybody's getting so disassociated from reality that we prefer watching a digital screen than we do actually experience it in real life. I don't know. That's just my take. I'm off the cuff on that.
Well, you know what's so funny? A year ago or 2 years ago, I forgot, our opening game was against the Cowboys at Dallas Stadium, you know, where the Cowboys play, right? It wasn't the Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys. It was the Oklahoma Cowboys. And we played there at Florida State for the opening game. And because I had season tickets, they offered us tickets to go there. And in fact, a friend of mine had season tickets, and he let me have a set. I paid him for them, of course. And what was funny is the screen was, I think it was 60 feet tall by, you know, gosh, 180 feet wide or something crazy like that, you know, and it was huge. And then we're sitting there like, you know, in the 40-yard line, you know, in these really cool seats, and I'm looking at this giant screen, and I catch myself. I got the field underneath the screen, right? But the screen is like eye level with me. I got to look down and see the field. I'm watching the game on the screen. Yeah. I finally told my wife, I said, wow, it's so much better on the screen because it's so big, you know? and because you can watch the live play on the screen and see everything, you know, and then watch all the replays. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting how we're being trained to go into a virtual world. Yep. Of course, Kurzweil has said that within a few years, we're going to have a hive mind, that our brain will be doing all of its thinking up in the hive mind, up in the cloud, and telling us what to do. So that's where this is headed, guys. Here's another interesting thing. DARPA unveils the plans for a world's first flotilla of killer robot warships.
Oh, great.
Oh, God. What could go wrong with that? Within 5 years, with a killer drone of arms and race heats up across the planet, filling the sky with automatic weapons of war, it makes perfect sense that the seas would soon follow, amid cries of restraint from members of the scientific community and academia, as well as those within the field of robotics. The U.S. military is going ahead with DARPA in the development of a 132-foot Stalker warship that may soon patrol the world's ocean, fully automated. DARPA describes it as follows: anti-submarine warfare, continuous trail, unmanned vessel program has designed and developed and constructed an entirely new class of ocean-going vessel, one intended to traverse thousands of kilometers over the open seas for months at a time, all without a single crew member aboard. Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Work is once again out on the campaign trail, stumping for a future filled with these unmanned systems that will ensure U.S. dominance within the battle space, as he likes to call planet Earth. Are you joking me? Watch the movie Terminator, you idiots. What, you know, I'm not talking to our listeners. I'm talking to these idiots that are doing this, okay? You idiots that are doing this, you scum of the planet that are doing this, watch the movie Terminator. When you give the AI the ability to do what it wants and you give it consciousness, it decides it doesn't like people. Okay? The people are the problem, and it starts killing people. So when you start putting these types of weapons out there, what happens if it goes autonomous and it decides it wants to do it? You stupid, stupid scientist. Do you not realize that this could be the end of humanity as we know it? Flying drones everywhere, automated robots everywhere, killer patrol ships on the seas. Are you joking me? If one of these things finds you on the open ocean, you're a little sailboat, you can't talk to it. You can't reason with it. If it thinks you're a threat, it's going to sink you or shoot you. There's no talking to this thing. This is Terminator on steroids, and we're doing this. You know, Cyberdyne systems are well, they're doing great in the United States, and we got these people who like to blow holes in the ionosphere with hydrogen bombs now building things like this. Are you joking? These guys are all nuts. Oh, God, I'm sorry, Austin. Go ahead. What's your next story?
The movie RoboCop, the first original RoboCop, not this Bobo remake they did, but the real one back, I think, in the 80s, had one of the best scenes that would go right with that discussion you just had, where all these guys are in this board member room, and they bring this giant machine, and you remember this, he's like 15 feet tall, he's got machine guns all over him, and they said, this is the new street patrol, we're getting rid of cops, this is the new patrol, and they said, he can't break, he can't run out of ammo, he can't do anything wrong, he can only follow orders, and he only listens to command. And he gets one of the guys, he goes, here, take this gun, this is a gun, point it at him, and watch what he does. The guy goes, okay, so he points the gun at him, the robot goes, halt, put your weapon down now, arms up, shoulders flare up, arms flare out, all these, you know, minigun pops out. The guy goes, okay, and he drops the gun. The machine goes, I said drop the weapon now. Guy goes, there's no weapon here. The scientist runs up behind him and he goes, hold on a second, let me tweak this. The machine goes, drop your weapon or I will shoot you. And the guy goes, I don't have a gun. He starts running around. The whole place starts scattering. And this robot completely mows this guy down, shoots him like 70 times in this boardroom. And they go, oh, well, we need to make some more changes on that. We'll take that back to the drawing board. I don't know, you have to see it. I'm sorry, I have a weird sense of humor sometimes.
Well, because you're right. This is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about these automatic machines that get a glitch in them and they're armed to the teeth with who knows what kind of weaponry. And of course, they're exactly right. They've got the pulse weapons now that they don't even need to they don't run out of bullets. They just have pulse cannons. You know, microwave weapons is what they are. They're Tesla technology. And, you know, they basically just fry you. They just short circuit your heart and everything else when they go through you. And so they can just keep shooting this thing indefinitely. I mean, you know, are you kidding me? This is what we're going to now. And there's nothing, these guys don't think anything's going to go wrong with any of this. I mean, are you kidding me? Here's another article. Chinese citizens protest against ChemChina's $43 billion acquisition of Syngenta, the big chemical company, Sustainable Pulse. A large group of Chinese experts and citizens have joined together to sign a protest letter against ChemChina's acquisition of Swiss pesticide giant Syngenta. The protest letter is based on the serious health concerns many Chinese citizens have over GMO crops and pesticides. The letter can be found in full, you know, on the website. And what's interesting to me about this is the Chinese are even starting to say, and these guys are the ones that are breathing air that's so foul you need a mask. Now they're saying that they don't want this junk anymore. I mean, guys, when are we going to wake up and realize that these pesticides and these GMO foods, I mean, we all know that on my show, but, you know, try to get the average person shopping at Sam's Wholesale Club, whose cart is filled with white bread and salami and sodium nitrite, to listen. They don't really want to listen, Austin. They don't really want to hear anything you have to say, because I've tried. Over the years, I've tried and tried and tried, and now, unless they've got a kid with them, I don't say anything to anybody about what they're eating, because why would I do that? Because it's just a big waste of time. And you've seen it with your friends, too, haven't you, Austin? Sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I try to do the best I can, you know, to basically lead by example, so to speak, when I'm in front of them, and make sure I always do the very best I can to eat as clean as I can and then give them the advice later on, so that way they see, you know, hey, man, he does what he says he does. You know, I mean, he eats like this. There's one other article I wanted to address, and I don't make any claims on this. This is actually what the research came up with on here. According to this recent meta-analysis, omega-3 fatty acids can help reduce the symptoms of depression without the risk associated with dangerous pharmaceuticals. The researchers, it was led by Roel J.T. Mocking of the Program of Mood Disorders. They state on here approximately 8% of the brain's weight consists of omega-3 fatty acids. And so the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Amsterdam, they reviewed 13 previous published studies that encompassed a total of almost 1,300 participants. The meta-analysis published in the journal Translational Psychiatry was conducted to investigate the health benefits attached to omega-3 fatty acid supplements for people diagnosed with major depressive disorder. The team found that people taking EPA and DHA omega-3 fatty acids experience a significant reduction in their depression symptoms. They went on to say omega-3 supplements may be specifically effective in the form of EPA in depressed patients using antidepressants. Now, again, guys, this is from this article from Roll JT Mocking. I'm not making any claims. I'm not telling you to come off your antidepressants. But what I am saying is that omega-3 fatty acids are crucial for the brain, and they're a must-have in any type of supplement stack. That's why we include them amongst all of our kits. Our basic healthy lifestyle kit has the capsules. We carry the cinnamon liquid, the old-fashioned liquid, whatever you guys want. We carry the top quality that we can get a hold of. And that's why we always recommend at healthmasters.com, omega-3 fatty acids and Ultimate Multiple are the two base supplements. If you're not going to do anything else, fish oil and Ultimate Multiple is the base thing to start off with on there.
You're right. And, guys, we have a newsletter you can get for free. And don't say that I'm doing an infomercial. We haven't even mentioned our website in the last hour. It's healthmasters.com. Because, guys, we're self-funded. And if you don't support us, then we can't support the show. We can't do the show. So that's how it works. I mean, we don't have a bunch of sponsors because, you know, who's going to let us – who's going to sponsor us? They're going to tell us not to say anything we say. I mean, are you joking? I mean, they don't want us saying this. They don't want us saying any of this. I mean, what are we going to get a drug company to sponsor? Let's bring Monsanto on as a sponsor. They're going to say, well, you can't say this, this, and this. I'm not doing that. So we're self-funded, okay? So – thank you for buying your supplements. Thank you for supporting us. Many of you have made contributions to us. Thank you. I really, really appreciate you guys doing that. And we just thank you. It's healthmasters.com. And that's why we're able to bring you this show commercial-free like this. I mean, it's commercial-free. I mean, you go to GCN. I tried to listen to some of the shows again this weekend. They have a 20-minute break from the bottom of the hour to like 20 to 10 minutes till. And they get right in the middle of it. They got like 7 minutes in, and they go 13-minute infomercial right there. You got to listen to it for 13 minutes. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm driving down the road. I don't want to listen to anything else. So I just turn it off. I turn it off and kick on a Carpenter CD with some of their positive music they used to play. And I'm like, you know, we're done. In about 8 minutes, I'll turn the music back off and see if they've stopped doing the infomercial. See, this is what I'm not going to do with this show. I refuse to do it. I refuse. I mean, if I can't get the support I need from you guys by doing what we do and giving you 2 hours of radio in less than an hour, I got to find some other way of promoting what we do and getting help to support the show. We love you guys. We appreciate you. We got the music going. Remember, healthmasters.com. Listen to the show last night. We did a whole bunch of stuff on healthy brain health, how to keep your brain healthy, and alternatives to different types of things and drugs that you're used. But again, don't stop taking any medications or drugs without the advice of your physician. We love you. We appreciate you. Austin, go ahead and close.
Yes, we thank you guys. If you have any questions, give me an email. And you guys have a blessed night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.